Okay, do you start, I mean, are you angry at these people? Do you try to get them to work
on your things, or are they just...
No,
you?
No,
not,
I mean,
it's not the women in the sky. Yeah, no, it's not the Chicanos, then, so, you know.
I mean, that's, and it's always been that way. I mean, in all the revolutions, in all the socialist revolutions, it's always been the men first, and then, well, maybe sometimes let's take care of the real issues, the economic uh-huh. issues first, and then we'll deal with the women's issues. Every socialist movement has been like that. And in the Mexican Revolution, it was the same thing. The women were active. And that was the other thing. You start reading Mexican history, and you realize that the stereotype of Mexican women doesn't hold up if you look at Mexican history, that this so-called passivity and the stereotype of the woman at home making the decisions isn't the role the Mexican woman has had in Mexico. If you look at the history, I started looking at the history. The women were active in the strikes and in the factories, and during the revolution they were holding down the fort and the cities and everything else in the factories. And they were pressing for equal rights under the Constitution. But the men told them, not now, let's let this go, let's take care of the economic issues first. And so the women didn't get the right to vote, I think, until the 30s in Mexico. And they made other changes, you know, very slowly. But actually before we did here in this country. But those things were always put on the back burner, because first you had to take care of the racist issues, and then you would take care of the sexist issues. And of course that's still an ongoing battle, although nowadays it's become so much a part of everything that I don't even know if that's still a discussion within there isn't really much Chicano movement anymore, but I don't think it's taken for granted that things will be more equalized, although obviously they're still not, and there's nothing to do with the Mexican, it has to do with the way the society looks at women.
So how much awareness at the time did you have of the white women's movement?
A great deal. I mean, we didn't really have a Chicana women's movement per se. I mean, we formed it.
Mm-hmm.
I read a lot. I was aware of the issues and translated those issues into our issues. I mean, basically I saw that it was very much the same for us, and that we had to take care of these things, that we were suffering from the double stigma of being not only Mexican-American, but also being women, and having to deal with a double layer of racism and sexism. And what I did when we first formed Comisión Femenil was try to bridge the gap between just making it a Chicana woman's issues and the issues of poverty, and trying to go beyond that and looking at what the broader women's issues were that were affecting us, because we were also women. And yes, we had a double whammy because of the color factor, but we still had to deal with things in terms of discrimination against women. And so I bridged us, and I got us involved in white women's groups and issues. And it was a hard sell, because at that time, most of the Chicano women that were involved felt that the white women's groups didn't have anything to say to because the issues were so different. Mm-hmm. And at that time, white women's movement basically was a white women's movement. It still is, for the most part. It hasn't really reached into the minority communities. And you have some Hispanic women that have gotten involved in that, for example, and NWPC, and as you have black women, but it's not been an all, you know, it hasn't mm-hmm. been extremely effective in terms of getting into these two groups.
Can you remember the first Chicana, or if you were calling some Chicano women back then, you know, that's what it's under on the computers at school, kept searching Chicana, you know, Chicana this, Chicana, and kept told me there's nothing in here. And so I found the Chicano women, and it pulled up like reams and reams of stuff. I couldn't believe that they had to change that.
Mm-hmm.
But can you remember the first meeting you went to that was all Chicano women?
It was that meeting at
the International Institute.
And then out of that, you had a subgroup that formed, which became Comisión Femenil. Because it was Francisco Flores and Vaya Munoz and Lidia Cedas and Francis Borges, who had been around for a longer period of time, and
mm-hmm.
who had been involved basically in Mexican-American political groups, MAPA and some of the other organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And they had gone to a Mexican-American Issues Conference in Sacramento, which I think was in 70 or 71. Yeah,
October.
Mm-hmm.
That's asking you. So this meeting that you went to at the International Institute, is this before the National
Comisión has been founded?
Yes. So this is sort of the national being founded. Very sketchy on the order of this.
It was before, and I'm not sure. The women there, I'm not sure if that happened before this issues conference or not.
Mm-hmm.
I remember seeing a flyer on the issues conference, and I remember thinking I would like to be there, but I didn't go for some reason or another.
Mm-hmm.
And then, interestingly enough, I was brought back to it by the subgroup that came out of this initial meeting.
Uh-huh.
Because what happened is that the welfare rights women wanted us all to take on that issue as the major struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we couldn't, because we couldn't connect with it, because most of us weren't welfare recipients. We were students, we were working, we were counselors, we were teachers, whatever we were. And we felt, yes, that was an issue that should be addressed, but it wasn't the only issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so the women that had gone to the National Mexican American Issues mm-hmm. Conference said, we need to have something for women. We need to have a job training program for women. And so they got Aguirre, who was the head of, who was the Department of Labor Western Regional Representative, to commit to giving money for a Chicana Service Action Center.
Mm-hmm.
So they wrote up a proposal. Grace Davis helped do that and set that up. They wrote a proposal. And in order to get funding, they had to create a nonprofit organization, and that's when they created Comisión Femenil Nacional.
Incorporated.
So that came first. The Nacional came first.
Okay.
And then they had to create a chapter to do the work, because the Nacional is only a national organization. And so many of us served as officers of the Nacional and as members of the LA chapter.
Uh-huh. So first it was just an LA chapter.
Right.
Okay.
It was really one of the same people.
Same
both,
thing.
We had two separate entities.
So did you do the same stuff that they did in the mainstream women's movement? Did you do consciousness raising?
It wasn't consciousness raising per se. I mean, we would talk amongst ourselves. We had no formal groups.
You didn't.
Mm-hmm. We just talked.
Mm-hmm.
And some of us met almost every night of the week, so we got real close and shared a lot of stuff. But we never had group leaders or, through that process, it probably would have been really helpful. We were more activist oriented in terms of trying to get things done. And since we had the Chicano Service Action Center, there were always things to take care of with regard to that.
So that was founded almost right off, right?
That was
like the very first thing you guys did was to form that.
Okay. Which would have been, I guess, in 71, because the Issues Conference was in 70. And I think that funding came down right after that, within a matter of months.
72. It's 73 with the Pennsylvania's.
Yeah.
Going to the Pennsylvania's.
73? It's 72 for the Chicano?
72 for the. Yeah. So I wonder if that was like when the grant started. I don't know how that takes forever. So you got funding for that, didn't you?
If the Issues Conference was in 70.
So the Issues Conference 70, 72, they testified before the State Commission on the status of the.
Then the Chicano Service Action Center was in 71.
Okay. So they get from 72.
Because we testified, I was one of the people who testified at the Blood Commission on the Status of Women. We testified at the Chicano Service Action Center was in operation for several months. And the way that testimony occurred is that we, again, this little group was meeting and talking.
Uh-huh.
And Francisco was saying we need to go testify because it's all white women and all older women and mm-hmm. there's no representatives and so on and so forth, and none of our issues were being raised. So they asked us to. I went off and did research on employment.
Mm-hmm.
I used to love to do statistics. I just thought that was the way you showed what the problems were. You just gave people
numbers.
You cannot discount numbers. And so we. I did all that research. I come back. I'm very proud of that. I always said, okay, here someone else can present it, because I wasn't a public speaker and I was only a young, experienced girl. And they said, no, you're going to give the testimony, and you, Gloria Molina, you're going to do that testimony, and you, Lily, as the director of the Chicago Service Action Center, will speak on behalf of the service center. And so we three went forth. And that was Gloria Molina's first public experience. It was my first public experience, and Lilia's, because Lilia was, she had been involved in Mexican-American community organizations, but she was never a leader. Put the consent between the legs. She was not a leader or a speaker, you know. I mean, she'd back them in, and of course she could think, and, you know, she would take them in on it.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, there was really no room for that. And so we went up there and we addressed the group, and we made a very powerful impression. And while we were at that meeting, it was so great to just get so much done. While we were at that meeting, we saw that there was, we had no representation in this board, and really all older women, all white.
Uh-huh.
So we asked how that could be changed, and we raised that issue during the commission meeting. And Phil Montes, who was the Western Regional Director, mm-hmm. Commissioner of Civil Rights, and still is, who I'd met before, was there. We said, how do we get this changed? And he said, well, let's meet with Richard Alatorre. The next morning, who was a councilman, we meet with Phil Montes. That was on a Saturday or Sunday. We meet with Phil Montes and Richard Alatorre to talk about how we can get a woman on the mm-hmm. commission. So Richard said, give me some names. And so we did, and we gave him several resumes and names. And as it turned out, Reagan appointed Carolyn LaRona, who was a Republican mm-hmm. woman, who actually had come through one of the Comisión meetings.
Mm-hmm.
So we just pulled her in the Comisión, we networked with her, she got the appointment, was fine, we felt happy about that, we, you know, didn't know that she was going to hold it. And so we worked with her, and so we really felt that we had the first achievement. And then we did the Child Care Center. And the way that happened was, again, meeting night after night after night, what are the issues? Okay, you can get a job, you've got the Chicano Service Action to train you, but how do you go to work if you don't have child care?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was working for United Way at that time, mm-hmm. joining the Valley thing, and I was a director. And I was invited to a meeting as one of the leaders, one of the Chicano leaders for the San Fernando Valley, then the U.S. Secretary John Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to find out what the issues were in the Valley for Mexican American. And so we met with them. And again, it was all men and three women. I forgot who the third woman was, but the second one was Anita Tovar and myself.
Mm-hmm.
And we fought to get child care on the agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And it was supposed to be item number 12. But when it came time to actually have a meeting with Tony, I couldn't go. Irene went. And the men manipulated the agenda so that it became item number 40. So it was never raised in the
uh-huh.
meeting with Tunney. And Tunney then said, well, what about child care? And so somebody said, well, they will get back to him. And I realized that we weren't going to get anything done working with these men.
Uh-huh.
So I said, forget them. Let's use Comisión as the vehicle. And let's go after funding for a child care center ourselves. And since we had a friend. Can we share? Can you get some two more? Here. And so I used the resources building it at United Way, and we got after work every day,
mm-hmm.
every day for 2 weeks. A group of us would meet, we would meet every day, and we would write this proposal. And I kind of directed and orchestrated this
mm-hmm.
thing. I knew nothing about childcare, and we got some gals that were from the city girls and had childcare experience. And we wrote this proposal. We had Richie Alatorre walk it through, and there were monies that came down then from Bob Moretti, who was Speaker of the Assembly, AB 99 monies for childcare. So we got that walked through, and we got the funding for the Centro de Niños. And when we got the money, I said at that point, here's the money, here's the proposal, I've done all this stuff. I said, somebody else has got to run this thing, I don't know anything about child care kids. Why am I here? And I walked away from it. Gloria Molina stepped in, and Irene Mendes was involved, and Margarita Mendes, and some other people, and things. So they came in and started running it and getting a board together and all the mm-hmm. rest of it. So that was our second project. And basically, in those early days, there were like five of us that used to meet almost every night of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And we would move things.
Mm-hmm.
And because we had success in starting with the status of women's thing to the child care center, to whatever we did, it seemed to turn to gold. We were able to move a great deal. And it seemed like there were hundreds of women out there doing all these things. And it was really just five of us, three of us, that did all the actual work. And yet we had, you know, 20 or 25 people in the chapter, and, you know, we could always bring in larger and larger numbers of people, but there was really just a handful, a core group. And then there was also, way back when, Sandy Sewell could probably give you that year, the first Comisión conference in Santa Barbara.
73.
Okay,
73.
And that was a wonderful meeting because we had women from all over the state. But we could never get them into Comisión. There were so many sub-factions. You go to this thing and they want to deal with immigration, and somebody else wants to deal with employment. And everybody kind of got away from the basic women's issues because our goal was leadership development and economic
development. Was that your goal? Did you want
The basic charge was to upgrade the status of Chicano women. That was what Comisión was about. And leadership development and employment and legislative advocacy. Those really were our priorities in those days.
So similar to now in the things that you were wanting. So even though you came from this sort of leftist student orientation, you said that you never bought into that to begin with, and so it wasn't a big deal. I put you in a group. my subjects are invited into two groups, and I was in groups. Well, I really hate labeling these groups, and it took me two pages to justify my labels, but my labels are radical and reform. Instead of
women's rights. We're not radicals.
Women's rights and women's liberation is too confusing, and older and younger.
Okay, radical and reform, yeah, we were basically reformers. We're not radicals. Very Molina was not a radical.
Very few people were.
Francisca Flores could have been.
Uh-huh.
And she did have more of a leftist socialist perspective. But she was damn pragmatic, and she knew what worked politically. And she got us together with Vano Spencer, the black woman. She was a community justice at that point in time. And she knew how to network, and she knew how to move things politically. She was extremely pragmatic.
Well, from what I can tell you, people accomplished the most out of anybody. You're the only ones that have things that are still going. It's very interesting when I have to come down. I have to assess. I'm so slow. Pass judgment.
Well,
on the movement, it's very interesting because, you know, it's the Comisión still exists, you know, none of the radical, only the reform groups basically still exist now and things like that. So.
And yet, it's interesting because they tend to be very destructive because they get so caught up in the ideology, and their damn egos are all over the place. There are still people floating around the Chicano community that are the old radical types, and they don't change, and they start getting a little bit slicker, but they still speak for all of this ideological caca, which is all it is when you really get caught up in all that stuff. I can't stand any. Give me something functional. Let's have a goal. That's what I loved about our group, and we did so much because we would just say, what needs to be done? Okay, here's how we're going to do it, and we just start doing it. And we didn't get caught up in all this other stuff.
Now, were you structured? There's only five of you. Probably not at that time.
We had a structure. We had board members. We had president, vice president, and all that stuff, and for the national and for the local. Mm-hmm. And Gloria was, I think, the first president for the local chapter. I'm not sure.
But was it a big deal? You said it was basically the five of you meeting every night.
We had chapter meetings. We had meetings on Saturdays, and we had
Robert's Rules of Order.
Absolutely. Oh, Francisca was a.
She was
a Francisca was an organizational mastermind. I mean, she was just a genius at it. She's probably asleep. And she weighed a ton.
8:30. Well, I robbed you of your quality time too. So. If one of you wanted to have one goal, and the president wanted to work on the other thing, would it go? The president? Would you vote?
We would vote. There was a lot of muscling. We were very strong personalities. Sometimes we would bend the will of one and bend the will of the other. And Francisca really directed us. She moved us like puppets until she and Gloria would start knocking heads, or she and Lydia would start knocking heads. And then when she couldn't move us the way she wanted, then other things took place, and some of them were pretty brutal. And she was real tough on media. And she and Gloria had a falling out that I don't even understand what it was over. And she and I didn't knock heads too much, because I've always been the one that's gotten along with everyone. And I basically, I accomplished what I wanted to accomplish, and the things that I thought were important, I was able to do, so I was happy with that. And so we never really clashed. I really loved her and admired her immensely. And I disagreed with her fully, but she's really further to the left than I was. But I really loved her and I really admired her, and I was fascinated by her writing and the way she had conducted her life, and you know, being alone all those years, and just kind of hanging out there with the men. I mean, she'd go toe-to-toe with these men. I mean, she's really an incredible human being.
So you were supporting yourself, what? Still by working for the United Way?
I was working full time, yeah. At that time, I was working full time for the United Way.
And you thought you'd just be a counselor for the rest of your life? Or had you still
not been the United Way? At that point, I became the director. I was the director for the United Way. And then I had a, I went over to the chancellor's office for the state college system. And I was making $18,000 a year, which was a lot of money then, working for the chancellor's office. It was a really top position, running a statewide manpower training program for welfare recipients in the state college system. And at that time, I started hosting my first television show in Foxville at KCBS, I mean, at KNBC. So I was making another $6,000 a year over there. So, I mean, I had a really good income in those days. And then after 9 months of working at Chandler's office, I decided I wanted to work full time in television. So I was living on $6,000 a year for 9 months.
Mine is off the standard of living.
I've done that twice. I did it then, and I did it when I was in Sacramento, and I took a pay cut to go back into television.
By that time thinking that you,
I still didn't know.
Be active?
No, I never consciously looked to be an activist. I never, I mean, I think I was being groomed, and I felt when I met my husband, I felt I was being groomed for a political career. I felt like Francisca, and if people could look at you from the outside in, I felt I was being groomed by these mentors that I had. And placed in the public eye, and because I was articulate and I was able to, you know, to do these things, I would have been considered a natural for it. And part of me was moving in that direction, even though I was active, you know, politically, and we would support Richard Auditorium, and, you know, we would, you know, sell tickets for his foundation and stuff like that. And I had that exposure, you know, hosting a television show. But when I got together with my husband, I mean, then, you know, it shifts because I, you know, got pregnant right away and I had to start thinking about, you know, baby, and I had my career, which I dropped for 2 years when I had my son and baby with her. So my priorities shifted. But up until that point in time, I think I was being groomed for that.
So what year did you get married?
35.
Were there, you know, the women's movement was the white ones, a lot of factions, a lot of conflict, a lot of splits. Now, Chicano movement being so much smaller, did it still have? There was everybody who had their point of view, and
everybody had their point of view, and you always got, again, using your category, you had the ideologues who wanted to talk about all this theory and stuff, and place the movement within that ideological framework, and then you had the people who basically just wanted to get things done, and then you had people in between. You had the personalities, and the interesting thing about the group process is that you could only go as far as the individuals in the group will let you go, because you've got to deal with all the personalities and conflicts. Ana Nieto Gomez was a teacher of Chicana studies out at Northridge, and she got herself in a lot of hot water with the guys out there, which would not be difficult to do because men are so primitive in the valley. But she was more ideological, and she did not like Gloria and I, and I recall said some very unkind things about us, and I don't know on what basis, because I never really confronted with her, but we were, because we were a former process and so on and so forth, I think there was a certain amount of jealousy that was involved. And I basically ignored it. I was hurt by it. I felt really bad about it because she said some things that just weren't true. And I felt bad because here I was spending virtually my whole life in these meetings trying to get things done, which were not for my personal benefit, but which I felt I was doing because they were necessary and I wanted to. So there were these little, you know, there were these little factions, and even within our group, when it sometimes went just really collide or something, and people wouldn't talk to each other. And people would not become involved for whatever reason. Just like some of us, when the Hispanic Women's Council was formed, many of us went to their founding meeting, but they were a much more conservative group. We were more grassroots, you know, into the movement, at least in the spirit of the movement, if not as ideological.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Hispanic Women's Council was much more, they were more affluent, they were more professional, they were older, and their goals were somewhat different than ours, being more grassroots. So we were trying to relate to and provide services and awareness and development and growth and all that for so-called grassroots Mexican American women. And they were more of a professional, you know, more middle-class organization. And so we joined, but we basically never really got totally involved in another level of Mexican American women got involved in that group. And they're still very viable, and they've raised thousands of dollars. They have banquets at the Century Fox Hotel at a real spiffy, and they bring in celebrities. And, they do things on that level, but they're not at all political. And if not, when they have a scholarship program going, they've done a lot of really good things. But we've had, the leadership training has really come out of, I think, our group.
So when did the other chapters end up being founded?
Some out of that Santa Barbara conference.
So you have people from all over the state,
right,
after that.
And then we tried to form chapters. We had a chapter in Berkeley, a chapter in Fresno.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was a chapter in San Diego. And then we would lose some chapters, and some would open up in Colorado or Texas when somebody would branch out.
Mm-hmm.
But trying to keep them flourishing, and then trying to get them to pay a dollar dues or whatever it was to the Mexican Knowledge of people, because they're figuring, what are we getting in return for this? Because people basically wanted to work on their own issues, and they didn't want another organization to direct what issues were the priorities, which is what they were trying to do. I still feel that the Mexican American organizations today would be more effective if each one would take an issue.
Mm-hmm.
One would take housing, one would take the media, one would take education, one would take immigration, instead of all of them trying to work simultaneously and diluting all their efforts. And then you could network and come together on something and really make a big splash, because there's never been that kind of organization between groups because of the differences in the personalities involved.
Would you guys ever do demonstrations or activities like that?
We would participate in them.
Uh-huh.
But no, we never. We would join in rallies and things like that.
So, on the commemorations of suffrage, you would join in.
We would try to send representatives, because I was the one that was always the link between the west side and the east side, and so we would try to do that. But there again, most of the women felt that movement had nothing to do with our needs, and I was the one that was always saying that we've got to represent ourselves there in order to represent our issues in the national women's arena, because if we don't represent ourselves there, they're certainly not going to come and ask us what we want and what we think.
So issues such as like sexism and theoretical equality were really secondary to the bread and butter issues of like work, child care.
For Chicano women, the basic thing was the lack of education, the high dropout rate. And because of that, and having children, usually the women were entering the workforce in their 30s with no training and with minimal, you know, 10th grade education. And so you had to address that, whereas the white woman was trying to get into college and getting, you know, middle management and corporate level appointments. So it was such a disparate kind of thing. But as a result of the women getting involved, many of the women started going on and getting graduate degrees. And the first wave of, let's say, Chicana administrators in college, you know, came out of our era, and because of the encouragement and support that we get, you know, from our group.
What kind of reaction did you get from the Chicano men activists when you founded this organization?
I think they basically thought we were diluting the movement. Some of the older men, interestingly enough, were very supportive. I mean, the real old guard Mexican-American activists were very supportive of us because they loved certain members of the group and Francisco had a lot of respect for them. And even some of the younger ones were members. There were a handful of Mexican-American. Eddie Avila was very supportive and always came to our meetings and was right there with us. And there's a couple of justices, court judges now that were active and involved with us, but the hardcore activists and the educational level, the Rudy Acuna and all of that, would not be supportive of women. I'm sure they're still not. And Juan has had to be because of Adelaida.
So he got snagged into it. What does your husband think about it?
He's always very, very supportive. I mean, he really had to come a long way because he came out of a family where the father was a butcher and the mother was a very traditional homemaker. They couldn't relate to the fact that they never took his name. And he had a hard time with that initially. But he really had to come a long way, and he was open.